Welcome back. It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 730 WTNT, The Truth. I'm joined now by Brett Decker, Washington Times editorial page editor and co-author of the newly released book, Bowing to Beijing, How Barack Obama is Hastening America's Decline and Ushering a Century of Chinese Domination. Well, hello, Brett.
Happy Friday Eve, Andy.
Yes. It's not Friday, but it's Friday Eve.
As close as we can get.
It's the pre-Friday show that I'm doing today, as opposed to yesterday, it was the pre-Friday show. Hey, today's excerpt in the commentary section of the Times deals with China's ruling elite. How does the government of China really function? What is it? And who really runs it?
You know, Andy, I think this kind of exposes a real myth about communism, as they try to say they're the People's Party and they're for the masses, and you know, it's a populist political organization. And really what it is it's a powerful clique. And you know, they husband all the resources of a whole country just to benefit a few. And in China, they have this group with what's called the Princelings. And it's really amazing. It's the 200 or 300 descendants of the founders of the Communist Party in the 30s and 40s, you know, the thugs that were with Mao and when the party started, their grandchildren and great-grandchildren now have an aristocratic hold on the entire country, and that's running the business, is running the military, and running the government. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable.
Now, this is a very, very small segment of the population. The other day you had mentioned the middle class, which has grown a little bit,
yeah,
but still it doesn't make up the bulk of the country's population.
Yeah, it's a pretty good question. The middle class in China is, you know, 100 million or something, and that's out of a population of 1.3 billion, so less than 10%. Here the middle class is 60, 70%, at least it was before Obama became president. I think we're whittling down our middle class too pretty fast.
So
the middle class is really tiny compared to the American middle class. And you know, one thing, when we talk about all our companies wanting to grab the, you know, great Chinese market, 1.3 billion people, one thing people forget is it's not 1.3 billion consumers. You know, we were talking the other day, most of those people live like in the Stone Age.
Yeah.
It's really 100 million people that are the consumer market in China. So that's smaller than ours.
Yeah. That's interesting, because if you break it down, as you mentioned, there's this elite group, the princelings, as you call them, and then there's the middle class. That leaves a heck of a lot of people left, and they're poor, right? I would describe them as what, the worker bees? These are the people that do it all and don't get paid?
Dirt poor is actually literal, because most of these people have dirt floors in their houses and, eat dirt mixed in with their rice and that kind of thing. So, you know, dirt poor is actually a little literal description. You know, there's also this kind of marriage of convenience that, you know, the unholy alliance between the middle class and the business class, these new rich entrepreneurs, with the Communist Party. And that's where, ironically, the Communist Party gets its power base now, is from the rich.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of being a people's party, they're the rich people's party. And it's kind of obvious when you think about it. It makes sense. You know, this big middle class grew from nothing to 100 million. Well, the status quo works out pretty well for them. You know, the Communist Party is the one that got them to where they are.
Yeah.
So for them, you know, they don't have a problem with communism because it's worked out well for their family. And I think what's even more dastardly is there's a real selfishness there in the rich and in the middle class. They actually support the most repressive Beijing policies against the rest of the billions so of the masses, because they don't want people to get any more money and they don't want people to have more opportunity, because that'll just be more competition for them. And right now they have it pretty good. A billion and billion point three people, you know, 100 million divvy up the riches. You know, they don't really want anybody else to have a piece of the pie.
So is it wrong to think that the class system in China will ever go beyond the stage that it's in right now?
Well, I think the only reason it's even grown this much is, the leadership in Beijing looked really hard at their model when the Soviet Union came down and you know, when the wall came tumbling down in Berlin. They looked at it and they're like, you know what, we need to expand the franchise. We need to bring more people in on this. So that's when they started kind of really concentrating on building up the middle class. But if anything, that is to create a bigger buffer around the small clique of princelings that run the government. It's not really to expand opportunity. It's just to have a power base of outside of the party that has more money.
All right, but right now we've seen China grow tremendously when it comes to money.
Yeah,
their economy is, you know, grown in leaps and bounds. Do the people benefit more today than they did, you know, 20 years ago?
Only to a limited degree, as far as, at least as far as financially. You know, you have this middle class, but for the rest of the 1.2 billion, not at all. It's
not
as bad
okay.
or worse.
All right. What about human rights issues? Better now?
Actually, that's one thing most people kind of gloss over. But the government is more repressive and tougher than it was during the Tiananmen Square massacre in 89. Back then, everyone thought that China was becoming more enlightened and opening up. And when they sent the tanks in, and what most people don't know, it wasn't just Tiananmen Square in Beijing. They did the same thing. There were protests in hundreds of cities across China. And they crushed the dissent all over the place just as bloodily and brutally as they did in Beijing. So it was kind of a nationwide uprising that was, you know, smashed with an iron fist.
Yeah.
The people kind of learn from that, and they really don't stick their heads up too much anymore. So if anything, and the government has responded by the lesson that Beijing learned from that is, you know what, we were allowing too much dissent before, so now they don't even let, you know, they don't even let it sprout.
Huh. All right, you've been a busy man dealing with this book all week long. You're going to continue down this path of doing radio interview and TV interview night and day for the next...
Yeah, get 5 a.m. I'm getting about, a 10 in before at 9 a.m. It's not my usual schedule. I hope Mrs. Parks isn't too mad. You're probably seeing more of me this week than her.
Yeah. Oh, hey, that reminds me.
People are starting
me of something.
To talk.
Okay, so yesterday... Yeah, yesterday we're talking about all the food products, all the poison coming into this country from China. What do I have for dinner last night? Chinese food. From the name of the restaurant, Beijing.
Oh, my gosh.
That's absolutely true. And I got to tell you, the whole time I was eating that sweet and sour chicken that I got, I was thinking about where it came from and who handled it.
Were you washing it down with apple juice in a sippy cup?
No, same color as apple juice. I think it said Budweiser. I'm not
quite sure. Right,
right. All right. Well, listen, we'll talk again tomorrow. And by then, you really will be on your hands and knees crawling in.
Yeah, great to be on. And we need people to go to Amazon and bowingbook.com
and buy the book.
Get all these stocking stuffers.
That's right. Yeah, Brett has to eat next year. That's what he told me. Brett Decker, Washington Times editorial page editor and co-author of the newly released book, Bowing to Beijing, How Barack Obama is Hastening America's Decline and Ushering a Century of Chinese Domination.